America, America, you are so grand and golden. Oh, I wish I was deep in America tonight.
Hey there, America. Katie Wilson here.
And I'm Caitlin Scholl. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of
The Multiverse.
So I'm just going to cut right to the chase, because when it comes to motherhood, there aren't a lot of spare minutes in the day.
Or in this episode, to be quite frank.
That's right. We've got multiple voices coming your way as we expand upon the theme of economics and motherhood that we sort of started last episode when we looked at MLMs.
But now we're zeroing in on one of the most divisive factors within the mom tribe. Where exactly you work.
I mean, no matter how you slice it, all moms work, and they work hard.
And that's a fact that pretty much all moms agree upon, even if the rest of America has yet to catch on.
However, there can still be a lot of tension and massive divides between moms who choose to stay at home with their kids, you know, and shoulder the bulk of child rearing, while others decide to work outside the home.
Each decision has their own share of struggles, but for some reason, where and how moms work is something that has divided us rather than connected us for decades.
Before we get too far into this discussion, though, let's hand it over to the pros. I mean, having guest hosts means we're not supposed to be doing as much work, right?
Couldn't agree more. So, Paula and Nina, you ready?
Hell yeah.
Let's do this.
All right. Later, America. You're in good hands.
Yeah. Thanks, ladies. And, you know, don't work too hard.
I'm always kind of relieved when they leave. I know I'm not supposed to say that, but I don't know.
I mean, no one likes oversight.
Yeah, maybe that's why I started my own business.
Speaking of that, maybe we should introduce today's guest. We're going to spend a few episodes on the topic of moms and work, but today is devoted to someone who Paula and Katie were lucky enough to interview about motherhood, work, and how complicated it is to juggle the two.
So let me introduce Randi Zuckerberg, entrepreneur, investor, and Emmy-nominated tech media personality. She's also the founder and CEO of Zuckerberg Media and an actor who has performed on Broadway. Yes, you heard that right. But most importantly for today's purpose, she's the best-selling author of Pick Three, a book about so many things, but the idea of balancing work and parenthood in a way that actually makes sense versus the myth of work-life balance. Randi also happens to be a mother of three, including a newborn. Bless her soul.
I just found out, did you just have another child?
I did. In July, I had my third child, a little girl named Sierra.
Congratulations. That's huge. So now the like pick three is almost more relevant.
Absolutely. Well, I've always had this life mantra that it's better to be well lopsided than to be well balanced. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be perfectly balanced, but the honest answer is that at any phase of your life, you're a little more focused on a few things than other things, especially if you want to be great at those things. And so my mantra has always been work, sleep, family, friends, fitness, pick three. And a lot of times, you know, people, they kind of have like a gut reaction to that. Like, no, I'm the person who can pick all five. And then, you know, you sit and you have a conversation with them and they're like, no, I can pick three. So it's, you know, right now with a new baby, I wish I was picking sleep. I am not at all. I think the last time I got more than four hours of straight sleep was in June. And now here we are months. But, you know, it's actually, I love being on, I took a 2-month maternity leave and it was so awesome to just be really focused on family in a way that I don't normally get to. So I love being well lopsided. I think it's a beautiful way to live your life.
Well, I love that you're saying this, and because it is, you know, kind of the age of like the superwoman, super mom, you know, and yet it's not like we're expected in America to work like we don't have children and parent like we don't have a job. And I really think that you can't, you know, you do have to choose where you focus if you want to do anything well. And so the fact that you're being honest about that, I think is really important for moms to hear, because we're not prepared.
Well, thank
you.
That's a great phrase that you just said, because it's so true. We're kind of expected to like to do everything and pretend that everything we're doing is our only priority.
There's even tension around the decision of whether you can take your maternity leave if you want to keep your high-powered job. And so if you wanted to sort of break down a little bit of what your experience making those decisions was like and how it is for you being a working mom, we'd love to sort of hear that and any of your thoughts on, you know, why that tension exists in America.
Absolutely. No, I think you're right. That tension does exist. I've had 3 babies and 3 very different kind of maternity leave experiences, if you will. After my first son, I was working inside of a big company, and I did feel that push and pull where, you know, technically HR says, you know, you have this much time that you can take off, but if the company culture doesn't support that, it doesn't matter how much time they say you could take off. You know, you mm-hmm. feel like you're going to get penalized if you aren't immediately back on your email. And so that was a real push and pull. For my next 2 children, I started my own company, and that is a different kind of push and pull, because technically when you work for yourself, you can take however much time you want, but then you're not earning any money. And, you know, 50% of people in America are freelancers. And so a lot of people are experiencing this push and pull where, you know, you can have a maternity leave, but like how much of one can you afford if you work for yourself? And yeah. So I think there are different kinds of push and pulls on this, whether you work for someone else or yourself. And, you know, I only took 2 months off after this baby. It's not nearly enough. But, you know, I'm running my own company, and that's what I felt that I could take.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, I wonder with your first child, did you feel like at any point you were working to pay for childcare?
Oh, absolutely. I think there have been several times where I was like, wait a minute, I'm working, but I'm paying a nanny this much. Like, is it even worth it for me to be working?
Yeah.
Could I just be home and not having a nanny? And I think that's something that a lot of parents struggle with, are the rising cost of childcare and kind of the lack of support companies give. I know even for me, when I was in my corporate job, even like the cost of shipping breast milk home when I was on the road was so astronomical that I was like, you know, it's not even worth it to be nursing or pumping anymore. And so these are like the little decisions that working moms have to make every day that are just, they're really challenging.
So many decisions in motherhood that come with so many emotional attachments and opinions and sort of societal norms and pressures that it's enough to make you lose your mind when you're already getting no sleep. You know, like, what do we do to better support, you know, mothers and each other in general? I mean, have you seen anything that's working? Is there anything you've experienced throughout your kind of journey in motherhood that has been helpful?
Absolutely. And I think you're totally right. I think surrounding yourself with other people, with friends, with other moms who aren't judging you, I think is the best. I mean, I have definitely found, you know, it took me a while, but I found my group of women that like aren't pressuring me to do anything. Like they're not going to judge me if I want to nurse for a year. They're also not going to judge me if I want to stop after 8 weeks. And I think it's very important to surround yourself with people who support you and lift you up no matter what your decisions are, because, you know, if we are living by this pick 3 mantra where we know we can't do everything and we have to prioritize, each of us, we're going to make different choices depending on what our priorities are. And just because I have a certain pick 3 doesn't mean that that's someone else's. And you have to, you know, you have to surround yourself with people who are going to respect and support that. So for me, one of the things that has been a total game changer for me is, I guess, like apparently there's been a lot of innovation in breast pumps over the last 8 years since I had my first son to now.
God, I hope so. I couldn't imagine.
I mean, like, I I just have, like, I feel like if I ever even hear the word Mandela after this, I have PTSD. Like, it's just going to send me into, like, a spiral of therapy.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
But now I found these, like, little portable ones that just go on your bra, and I feel like that is, like, going to be a complete game changer for me.
Wow, so this is, like the earbuds of breast
milk. Yeah. like the Apple, like the AirBuds of breast pumping. It's amazing. I'm just thinking of, like, all those, like, dirty airport bathrooms with, like, the hand squeegee pump. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh my God, yeah. How did I even, like, survive that?
Okay, this is wild. I mean, this actually is making me think a ton of, like, you know, women's innovation and tech. And I mean, there's a lot of room for improvement in this kind of thing in the motherhood tribe and in the motherhood product.
You're so right. And there's honestly been, like, almost no money that has gone into it. So in the tech world, this area is called femtech. And when you think about, like, the billions and billions of dollars going into, like, blockchain and AI and all these things, there's been, like, hardly any money that has gone into femtech. It's been really hard for entrepreneurs in that area to raise any funds or do anything, which is crazy, because if you think, like, 50% of the population is having these issues and, like, no money is going into funding it. But I think finally we're seeing a little bit of a tipping point and more tech innovation in this area.
Wow. Do you think that that's kind of an up and coming market? Is that something you're involved in?
100%. I actually, I made an angel investment in a company that was working on a smart breast pump. They actually got acquired by a bigger company recently. And now there are tons of entrepreneurs that are working on everything from, like, smart Kegel devices to all kinds of things. And it's pretty amazing when you think about, you know, how many lives can be improved by technology that way.
I love your message to stay-at-home moms about staying current with skills and information related to their career industry if they might go back to work. And I think I was a stay-at-home mom for 20 years, and I think this really also could help moms feel less isolated and less disconnected from their communities. Can you give us some, like, specific examples of things that these moms might do to sort of stay in that world?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it's incredible. It's the toughest job around to be a stay-at-home parent, and we definitely need to give more credit and more support. That being said, I think a lot of parents who do take that gap in their career, they do find at some point that they miss it a little bit. Maybe when their children get older, they are, you know, they're not in the grind as much with young children. And so, but at that same time, there's a little bit of ageism in the workplace. There's a little bit of skepticism if you have a big gap on your resume. So I always recommend to people who are going to take a step back from their career for a little while to try to keep at least one toe in it. It could be, like, your tiniest pinky toe. And maybe it's something like starting a podcast. Like, starting a podcast is a great way to stay in it, because, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, you can interview someone, so you can stay in touch with your professional contacts and your network. But it's really only, you know, a few hours here and there that you're working on something. Freelance writing is a great way to stay involved. There are so many great ways now to work remotely or to work part-time or to be part of the gig economy. We're not looking at a world anymore where you're either going into an office 9 to 5 or you're a stay-at-home parent. There are now 30 degrees of being employed between those two things. So I think there are a lot more options for people that want to take a step back.
I agree. I love that. I think for me personally, keeping my foot in that world really helped me.
Absolutely. Before. It gives you a network of other people. It gives you something to talk about besides your children and your family. And it gives you something that's, you know, that's just yours. So I'm a big fan, you know, even if it's like a hobby that you're taking on that you can really dive into. I think having something that's all yours really helps with kind of keeping your identity during those years.
Oh God. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I went through that total identity crisis you know, where I'm like, who am I anymore? I mean, I'm like a milkmaid. I have no, I have very little connection to, I feel like a cow more than anything right now. And, you know, you do, I mean, you just get, it's so consuming. You're getting very little sleep, and to be able to check back into, it's almost grounding to be able to go back into something that reminds you that you do have an identity outside of being a mom.
I'm sure. 100%. I yelled at my Fitbit the other day. Like, that's how you know you're sleep deprived, is when you shout inanimate objects, because it was like, it like Fitbit did this update where now it rates how well you sleep.
Yeah.
And it like, it's like, and it like, I woke up and it was like, poor, that was a poor sleep. And then it like made a suggestion to me to like, try to like have more regular hours of sleep. And I was like, F you, Fitbit, like you have no idea what I'm going
through. That Fitbit needs to have a conversation with your baby. That's what it needs to do.
Exactly.
But that's such a great analogy. I mean, doesn't that feel like the Fitbit is such a perfect way to represent sort of society, you know? And that's how you feel. You feel like it's you against like society / the man / you know, I don't know, the world out there.
Exactly. Right. Totally right.
Right. It's like as if your Fitbit rated your trip to the grocery store with the children. That was a poor trip to the grocery store. Here are some suggestions.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I get rid of that thing so fast.
Yeah, here's some suggestions on how to be like a better person.
Right. Right. Let me give you some useless amazing information. I had no idea it was a poor night of sleep. Thanks so much for telling me.
Yeah, I'm like, oh wow. I thought having 4 hours of sleep is a great night of sleep. Oh my, thanks for educating me.
Oh my goodness.
Asshole.
Oh my goodness. One of the things I hear a lot from working moms in the first few months when they're up all night is that they feel so brain dead and that they maybe perhaps shouldn't be driving. And I don't think we think enough about sleep deprivation and the role that it plays in brain function. And we as moms returning to work at, you know, 6 weeks, sometimes even sooner, and they have to commute and they have to function. And we ignore the fact that they're literally sleeping for sometimes 4 hours total. And it's not even all at the same time.
I know. No, you're right. And I think one of the interviews that I did for my book, Pick Three, I interviewed a surgeon who sometimes has to be on call for 72 straight hours in the hospital.
Wow.
So I was asking him about his tips and how he counsels his team. You know, how do you survive basically for 72 hours and do complicated things like life and death surgery? I'm not exactly sure. Like the first thing that I asked my OB when I went in to like have my daughter, I was like, are you well rested? You don't want someone who's sleep deprived, like doing complicated medical procedures on you. But he was saying that being sleep deprived is basically like driving at like the most intoxicated that you possibly can.
Right.
I believe it. And he said it's basically like worse than that, being sleep deprived and being on the road. So a lot of hospitals now, like they won't let surgeons drive home if they've been on call for certain.
But yet they will.
How about they just don't put them on call that long?
I mean,
it's crazy. Yeah, he said the amount of like mistakes that you make late in your call like that. I mean, there's a huge correlation. So you're right. How can we be expected to be, you know, peak performance in our jobs when we're sleeping 3-4 hours a night as new parents?
Yeah, and not only are you expected to perform in a job, perhaps, but also, you know, make really healthy, creative food for everybody and like be a good lover to your partner. And, you know, I mean, look wonderful in your postpartum outfit. And I mean, all this bullshit. And like, I'm just trying to get through the day.
Yeah, that's right. For sure. Yes. And I think that's why like I've really leaned on this, like being well lopsided. Cause I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like, I'm not going to, like, immediately lose all the weight. Like, that's just not going to happen. Like, that's not my priority right now. And actually, this time around, I didn't even, like, take visitors to see the baby. And I know that maybe that's like kind of mean, but I was just like, I can't like prioritize other people right now. I have
no way. Good for you.
I'm like, I have a baby and I have two young other children. Like, I just, like, I cannot prioritize other people's feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did the same. We did the same with our fifth baby. And I think we actually had people come by the house to bring us food and they would text me and I would text them back and say, you can leave that on the porch. I'm not up for visiting right now.
Totally.
And it was so busy. Awesome. And I talk to families about this a lot because I think there's pressure there that people are excited to see your baby, but your baby's going to look exactly the same to them in 3 weeks that they do in the first week. Like, this is not, and you will never get that time back. And when you pay for it is at 2 a.m. because all those people that visited you are sleeping and you're up with a baby.
That's exactly right. And it just goes by in a blink of an eye, like those first few weeks when your baby will just like snooze on you and do all those things. And so like for me, I just felt like I was like, I know this is my last go around at this and I want to enjoy it. And I'm going to selfishly enjoy this period.
So are there other things like based on your experience with your last two that you're doing differently this time?
For sure. I mean, I think with my first, I don't know if you felt this way, but I was so anxious. I had no clue what I was doing. And so I think that projected onto the baby. And so I had a very kind of like anxious, neurotic baby because I was anxious and neurotic. Like, I mean, I don't know about you, but like my Krig machine came with a manual the size of like 8 inches thick, but like they send you home with a baby with nothing.
Nobody told you. No, they're like, okay, does your car seat work? Here you go.
That's right. Okay. And then here you go. Here's like a human. Like, enjoy it.
Good luck. Keep it alive if you can.
I feel like I did not enjoy my first baby because I was just a total wreck. But this time around, like, I was like, okay, I finally think I know what I'm doing. And my husband actually got to take a month off of paternity leave also. Wow. And so like it was actually just this beautiful month with like me and my husband and the baby together. And I was like, I'm just going to like be so selfish and enjoy this month of my life in a way that I didn't really feel like I could do with my other children.
That's awesome.
Are there any specific like supports that you leaned on this time around that you didn't with your first maybe one or two?
Yes. I mean, I now live across the country for my whole family, which is tough. Mm-hmm. You know, I really leaned on my mom to help with my first children in California. Now we're in New York by ourselves. You know, I feel so lucky that we have the means to have a baby nurse with us at night. Mm. That's been so helpful, especially having two other children. I don't know how I would survive being up all night with a baby and then like being up taking like my young kids to preschool in the morning. So that is something that honestly, she comes at like 9 p.m. I'm standing at the door at 8:59 holding the baby being like, I love you so much. I wish I could French kiss you. Thank you for coming.
Oh man.
But that's been a real game changer for me. But it is hard to be across the country from your family when, you know, you could really use that support.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think we're a country that's very separated from our others. And I think that's where those pieces come in. Dual support, night overnight care for your baby. I love when people in the spotlight talk about it, because I also think there's some judgment there about utilizing those things, that you should be able to do it on your own. And I think that that's utter bullshit, and that if you have the means, that you can actually just mom a whole lot better if you get a little bit of support in the background.
Totally. I always feel like money does not buy happiness, except when it can buy sleep, and then it buys happiness. That is the only time that money can actually buy happiness. So, you know, that's like, if you have some, throw it at that.
I love that you're going there too, because I do think that there is judgment, a lot of judgment around that. And it's all the support systems, but this is a really great example because it also comes down around socioeconomic lines, which is another tribal divide in our country. And I'm just wondering if for you that was, I mean, is that something that you had any problem sharing with people at first or making a decision around or any self-judgment as you made that call? Like, can you just clue us into what that decision was like for you?
I mean, 100%. And I felt like, especially in California, I felt that people pretend that they don't have help. Like they pretend they do it all themselves perfectly. It was really a breath of fresh air for me when I moved to New York City. And the first day that I dropped my son off at school, one of the moms was like, "Our sons seem to like playing together. Should we have our nannies get them together?" And I was like, "Thank you so much. Like, thank you for the like no bullshit. Like, thank you for not like pretending that like just because like we have kids in preschool that like you and I have time to be best friends and everything."
like New York California, is so no bullshit.
So no bullshit. And like in California, it was like even people who had four nannies like would show up at a play date pretending that they were like a full-time caregiver. And I was just like, I can't with this charade. Like we need to. So for me, I mean, I'm on the road 100 days a year, which is difficult to be away from my family, but also I love what I do. I love connecting with entrepreneurs around the world and I wouldn't trade a minute of doing it. And so that means that, you know, my household requires a lot of childcare support that isn't me. And I used to be very embarrassed about saying that and admitting it. But now, like I think you said, I think, you know, if more people admit that they can't do it alone and they need help, you know, I can't be in a situation where I'm in India and someone calls in sick and there's no one with my children. So, you know, I have help and then I have backup help. You know, it's a little embarrassing, but I think, you know, I'm putting it out there because I can't do it alone. And in order for me to have the career that I want, I need that support.
That's awesome. And, yeah. And look at you. I mean, like you're getting shit done and how are you supposed to do it without help?
For sure. Yeah. And, you know, and one thing that's been really wonderful is that my kids have not had separation issues or anything like that going to school because I think they've gotten used to having a lot of people who love them who are around and not just one. And so, you know, at least that's what I tell myself to relieve the guilt.
That's awesome. I mean, I think
because guilt is the hardest part.
Totally. I mean, the mom guilt thing is overwhelming and there's a gazillion things to feel guilty about. And yet at the end of the day, the more people around your kid giving them love, the better, right? I mean, that is not a bad thing.
Totally.
That actually rolls right into my next question for you, Randy, is can you tell us what your top three recommendations are for moms struggling with the hamster wheel feeling? I feel like I'm deep in the hamster wheel feeling right now. But I'm curious, God, sort of with the logistics of being a working mom, like what do you think are the biggest three things that you would recommend?
Okay, well, I mean, I'm a little bit in the hamster wheel too. I just complained the other day that like I'm in the movie Groundhog Day, you know, where like the alarm goes off and it's the same day every day. I'm here I am. I'm like back with like the breast pump and the baby coming in and the this and then like, oh, yeah. Tomorrow is going to be the identical day to this.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that I'm the best person to be giving advice right now, but I do have to say that I just bought, it's called the LV. It's like that little breast pump I was telling you that goes right in your bra. And that has like really gotten me off the hamster wheel. Because I feel like now I feel like I could pump in the back of a taxi on and anywhere, like in the subway. And that has really, I feel like, bought me my life back to be able to not be like tied down to like a chair with tubes and stuff.
And need power.
So, yes. So I've now recommended to every mom to be that they put that on their registry. It's a little bit pricey, so it's like a good gift for someone else to get you. But that has really just like bought me my life back and gotten me out of my house a little more. I don't know. You asked for three things. I feel like I can barely even remember my own name right now. That's like the only one that I can think of.
Okay. Well, right now to end the interview, we're going to give you a rapid fire question. We're going to give you 20 questions. Right. You get to come.
I love it.
Randy, this has been so awesome. I love that you just kind of leveled and also totally broke some tribal assumptions that I think a lot of people make where they're like, okay, well, if someone has a high powered or glamorous or even just like slightly more well-funded lifestyle than I do, that they don't have the same problems. And yet, you know, guess what? Moms, it's Groundhog Day for everybody in the first few months.
That's right. It is for everybody. everyone has guilt. And that was like the big thing that I learned as I was writing Pick Three. I was like, I'm going to sit down with these like Olympic athletes and people like that, and they're not going to have any guilt. Like, they're achieving such incredible things. Everyone has guilt. Everyone is thinking about what they're not doing, and everyone is feeling bad, and everyone's like looking at other people and thinking they have their shit together better. So I, you know, no matter who you are, I just think like we're all just doing the very best we can. And I am really proud of every mom that's out there, no matter, you know, if you're working, if you're home, if you're nursing, if you're not, whatever you're doing, like it's really awesome. And it's awesome to be part of that sisterhood.
Oh my God, she's hilarious.
I know. Fangirl alert. I read her book like 3 times. So this was kind of a really big deal for me.
Well, I think we should talk about that.
Oh, and we will. So tune in next time, people, for another episode of
The Multiverse,
where Paula and I will get down and dirty about Randi Zuckerberg's hilariousness and badassery.
And respond to more letters and even some call-ins from real moms trying to make it out there in America.
So now that the tables have turned and I am at home, it is as challenging as I thought it would be. You know, I really liked my time listening to audiobooks in the car on my commute to work. I appreciated being able to talk to coworkers uninterrupted. I appreciated being able to go to the bathroom by myself.
Why am I cold?
See, I told you. Told you it would get interrupted by little people. So now that's how my days are.
Until then, try not to die on the hamster wheel, America.
This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York skyline. From the redwood forest to the southeast shore, this land is my land, this land is yours, mama.
Kate Larson and my mommy, Kate Van Scholl, who also did the editing and sound design, as well as the beautiful tools and music. Miss Nat still is by Trish Bowles. Opening these music is America. The artist Belta Hand, British Artist Podcast, can be found at www.the-multiverse.com. To which you can also find Moment of Nation around us, the following artists, and new episodes. Thank you for so much listening, America. Bye.
When I'm up at 4 a.m. pumping and like feeling sorry for myself, I like my favorite thing to do is go on Instagram and just like message other moms that they're doing a great job.
Oh,
yes. I love that. That's beautiful.